Hello, and thanks for turning on The Blender, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's weekly podcast. I'm Bruce Jacobs, a producer at RFRL, and I'll be your host this week for this special Blender Year-Ender. In this episode, we take an in-depth look at three countries covered by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, talking to our service directors about the important events that transpired over the course of 2011. In Belarus, one-time presidential candidates were paraded through the courts following post-election protests.
There were days when there were five political trials with five or four people in the cage happening in Minsk. Eight presidential candidates out of 10 were at one or another time were behind bars.
In Azerbaijan, a look at the difficult and even deadly situation for journalists.
The problems with freedom of speech, freedom of press, and freedom of information in Azerbaijan remains.
But we begin in Afghanistan. U.S.-led coalition forces are scheduled to transfer responsibility for security operations completely to Afghan forces by the end of 2014. One development this year was the handover of security in seven Afghan provinces. Ron Sinovitz, a veteran reporter who spent time in the country, sat down with Akbar Ayazi, a regional director of broadcasting for RFERL, responsible for Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, and Iraq. He began by asking how well the security transition has gone so far and what that portends for the future.
Well, one of the cities was Kabul. That was the first stage of the transformation of security to the Afghan forces. As you can see, the Ashura event, the bomb explosion, that's a good example of how security is in these cities. I don't think it's going to help a lot when the security is transferred on the second stage to the Afghan forces. I think it will continue as it is.
When we look back on 2011, one of the developments that seems to stand out is the assassination of prominent Afghan figures, the former Afghan president Burhanuddin Rabbani and Afghan president Hamid Karzai's brother Ahmad Wali Karzai in Kandahar.
The security is the main concern and the biggest concern as far as the Afghan issues and for the Afghans. Throughout 5-6 years, the Taliban or the armed opposition have used suicide bombing and bomb attacks and sort of this guerrilla attacks as their tactic. But apparently it did not work well to intimidate the regime. Last year, they sort of changed the tactic and they started to go after these prominent figures and use this suicide bombing or bombing to kill, you know, many prominent leaders, tribal leaders, former President Rabbani, Karzai's brother. And I think still this tactic is continuing. Apparently, this was a better way to intimidate the government.
It seems there's also been an increase in attacks by the Haqqani network, which is based in Pakistan. How is that changing the security situation in Afghanistan?
Well, there's a belief and understanding the Haqqani network is a very close associate of Al-Qaeda and apparently has some kind of connection with some elements in the Pakistani intelligence ISI. So when the peace process or the negotiations started with this creation of the peace jirga last year, one of the events, the attacks of the Afghan Taliban in general subsided. But because the Haqqani network is opposed to any kinds of negotiations and it's closely associated with Al-Qaeda, they are the more notorious one conducting most of the attacks and not willing to negotiate. The United States and the international forces focused on this group and demanded the Pakistani authorities help in this because they are also not only conducting operations inside Afghanistan, apparently they're also associated with some of the groups of the Pakistani Taliban.
After the assassination of former President Rabbani, the man who was in charge of efforts to bring the Taliban into peace talks, reconciliation efforts seem to largely collapse.
And not only collapsed, I think it's pretty much non-existent now. In the beginning of last year and in 2010, the Afghan government, with the help of coalition forces in the United States, created this big peace jirga and this peace committee headed by former President Rabbani. They were supposed to be working with Taliban, talking to Taliban to see if they can go ahead with the peace process and negotiations. But we do not know who assassinated, which particular group, the Haqqani or other groups assassinated Rabbani with the killing of Rabbani and the brother of Hamid Karzai and other leaders and figures. Pretty much the peace process has gone to square one. But just recently in Bonn conference, apparently they invited some of the former Taliban to see if the international community can revive this process again, because after the assassination of Rabbani, President Karzai said, I do not have an address for the Taliban, and I don't know who to talk, and I will not talk to Taliban, because President Karzai said talk has to be done with Pakistanis and the Pakistani authorities. The Afghan government blames the Haqqani group and others who are associated with some elements in ISI. In the Bonn conference, this is what happened, and they're hoping to start this process again, and that's why they invited these former Taliban leaders.
Pakistan itself boycotted the Bonn conference, and no Taliban members attended either. So where does that leave things now?
Maybe they didn't attend it directly as official representatives of Taliban sitting officially in the conference, but from the unconfirmed reports that we have, and even confirmed reports, there were some members of Taliban in Bonn in the time of the conference where talks were taking place. We don't know about the results. But I think the international community can't leave just the way it is now. By 2014, when they start leaving Afghanistan, they want to have a process going. If the process is underway and the attacks and the security is under control, in that case, it will be much wiser for them to leave. Otherwise, I don't think the government of Afghanistan can sustain.
That was RFERL's Regional Director of Broadcasting, Akbar Ayazi, speaking with correspondent Ron Sinovitz.
Radio 28 languages, 21 countries, one voice. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.
It was not a good year for freedom in Belarus. Former presidential candidates were put on trial. People were arrested just for clapping to show their displeasure with the government. The office of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe was closed down. Correspondent Rob Coulson talked with Belarus Service Director Alexander Lukashuk about the dark developments of 2011.
Belarus began the last year with an election late in December in 2010. The re-elected long-standing president Alexander Lukashenko began a series of brutal crackdowns. How did the crackdown unfold?
See, I wasn't that... election night in Minsk in the central independent square, where the crowd after the election went, about 40,000-50,000 people. And after that, what I saw was a military operation. It was military units, thousands of them, tens of thousands, based, prepared along the way. Looks like the government was very well aware of the possible scenarios which could happen, and the whole operation was very fast and very brutal. Turned out it was only the beginning.
And what happened? How did it unfold this year?
The aftermath of the election was political trials. There were days when there were five political trials with five or four people in the cage happening in Minsk. Eight presidential candidates out of 10 were at one or another time were behind bars. Then later, most of them were put on trial and sentenced either to serve time in prison, penal colonies, or they got so-called suspended sentence, or put under house arrest. There was a variety of different measures. The reaction of the West was kind of disbelief on what was happening. The period before election, previous year, was a year of political liberalization, when it looked like Lukashenko could be allured to play this balance game between Brussels and Moscow. And in order to be able to continue to play, there will be concessions, democratic concessions. It turned out that it was not the case.
Was it that Lukashenko misplayed his hand, or did he make some sort of decision in favor of Moscow over Brussels?
If I try to guess the answer to your question, it would be that it was his decision. He was always suspicious of the Brussels. He has a fantastic instinct for about power, about what threatens his power and what's not, both on physical level but also on political level and the economic level. And the model which he has built in the country is based on a kind of a social contract. When I provide you warm water, some basic needs, and you stay away from politics. In his case, to give even a little more freedom, even a little more of economic freedom, and Belarus is at the very bottom of the world index of economic freedom, on the same level as North Korea, it means it will undermine his grip on the society. I think, though he doesn't speak Arabic, but of course he followed what was happening to his friend Gaddafi.
And what lessons do you think he got out of the Arab Spring?
I think his conclusion is very simple. Don't even allow it to start growing. What we saw in summer was very interesting. When the traditional opposition was brutally dispersed, put into prison, fined, pushed out of the country, penetrated by the KGB, tortured. But then a new group appeared, a group of internet bloggers, people active in social networks who tried to organize protests. They were unusual protests. People would just gather in the central squares of major cities and clap their hands or just walk silently. Crackdown was very fast and absolutely disproportional. First of all, police was extremely fast, overpowering everybody who was there and brutal. And then Lukashenko changed the law, and now the law forbids any gatherings of people organized by internet in any public place, even if they don't do anything. It effectively curbed social protests. One of the things which also was very new for Belarus this year is the use of the advanced Western technologies by the regime to follow, to harass its opponents. Everybody who was, for example, at the Central Square, the Independence Square, on the election night, their mobile phones were somehow found out by the police using this special equipment. And everybody who was there was later called for questioning by the police. Tens of thousands of people.
All the crackdown and the protests were going on against the background of a major economic collapse in the country. Can you summarize what happened with the economy?
Twice there were huge devaluations of the Belarusian ruble. Salaries collapsed by 70%. Inflation is more already by 100% in this year. With every month, it's hitting more and more and more.
When the elections were being held, the EU offered Lukashenko several billion dollars in aid if he carried out free elections. And they invited Belarus into the Eastern Partnership. The prospects for warmer relations between Brussels and Minsk seemed to be very high. And then he did this strange political crackdown, and the economy collapsed further, and now it seems like he's completely at the mercy of Moscow.
That's true. Those are clever guys in Moscow, Putin and Medvedev. They see his vulnerabilities, they see his mental weak points, basically his no balance at all. The only way to go is to agree with Putin's proposal of so-called Eurasian Union and privatization of Belarusian family jewels by Russian companies, and that's already happening.
And going into 2012, what do you think the prospects are for Belarus as a sovereign state?
There's a prospect of very fast kind of economic occupation of Belarus by the Russian capital. It may also lead to the abolishment of the Belarusian national currency and switching to the Russian ruble. And if it also leads to the same monetary policy, which will be dictated by the Bank of Russia, it will de facto mean the loss of any economic sovereignty in the country. Politically, of course, Lukashenko will stick to any political power he has. While he's in charge, he won't join Russia as one of the Russian so-called regions. Mm-hmm. That for him it will be suicide. He knows his partners very well, that he won't last very long. So he will protect sovereignty political, but economically he's no position to protect even the model he has any longer.
That was Belarus Service Director Alexander Lukashuk speaking with correspondent Rob Coulson.
Just a reminder that The Blender is the weekly podcast from Radio Free Europe. RFE brings radio, internet and television news to 21 countries across the former Soviet Union, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq and the Balkans. If you'd like to get in touch, it's very easy. Drop us a line at podcast@rferl.org or leave a comment on the Blender section of our website. And remember, you can download episodes of The Blender from our website or by subscribing on iTunes. A new episode is posted every Friday.
In Azerbaijan, it was not an easy year for journalists. They still faced the very real threat of going to prison for doing their jobs. There were also cases of physical threats, beatings, and even murder this year. RFERL editor Brian Whitmore began a discussion with Azerbaijani service director Kenan Aliyev by talking about one small piece of positive news this year regarding freedom of the press in the country.
We're here to discuss the main news events of 2011. I want to start with something that really caught my attention this year. The journalist, Aynullah Fethullahyev, was released after 4 years in prison in Azerbaijan. First, we're going to listen to a cut of him talking right after he was released.
The activity of international community helped me, of course. At first, the Amnesty International, I would like to... just to say thank you to Amnesty International, because in during 4 years, Amnesty International continued this complicated missions for my release.
So Mr. Fethullahyev, in his comments immediately upon being released, he made a point of thanking the international community. How important was this in pressuring the Azeri authorities into releasing him? He had been in prison for 4 years before that.
Yeah, I think it was crucial factor in his release. And despite the fact that government, for many years, as you said, 4 years he was in jail, rejected all the appeals, not only by international organizations like Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, CPJ, but also by the governments. OEC made several appeals. United States made many appeals.
So why this year? What finally broke?
Well, I think it's a good question to Aynullah, but... the reason I think the government decided that this case is damaging its image more than it's helping to keep him silent. Uh-huh. And Aynullah is out, and he's still active, he's still critical, but he's not in jail, and government is not receiving criticism about him being in prison. This case somehow got a lot of attention, and again, it's good to see him out, but the problems with freedom of speech, freedom of press, and freedom of information in Azerbaijan remains.
And the jailing of the problem of jailing journalists remains in Azerbaijan as well.
It's still a problem. And the sad fact, this year we also had the murder of one of the journalists and writer, Rafik Taghi, who was killed just in November. He was critical of political Islam, and he was critical of the Iranian regime. Nobody knows the motives of his killing. He was stabbed 7 times in Baku, then later he died in the hospital. But it shows that doing job as a journalist or writer in Azerbaijan and being independent sometimes could be very dangerous and deadly.
There was a bit of a controversy surrounding that case about the medical attention he received, if I'm not mistaken. Can you talk about this case
being investigated by the government. Officials say they're investigating and trying to find the killers. Yes, he was in hospital after being stabbed. And 1 hour before he died, he gave interview to Radio Free Europe, Red Liberty, Azerbaijani service, where he was still, very lively, and he was discussing what's being written in the press, what reaction his assassination attempt was receiving. And 1 hour later, doctors pronounced him dead.
Yeah, I saw the photos that were taken at that interview, and he certainly did not look like somebody that was about to die, although it's hard to sometimes judge from a photo. My first reaction at that photo was does not look like a person that's about to die. It was a pretty big year in Azerbaijan all around, actually. I mean, a lot. You won Eurovision.
Yes.
And are going to host Eurovision next year. Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, how important was winning Eurovision to Azerbaijan? How important is hosting it next year? Right. And is there seems to be a little controversy surrounding this because of Azerbaijan's human rights record and hosting such a big international event. So if you could talk a little bit about that.
I mean, this is probably one of the biggest events that Azerbaijan will host next year. And winning Eurovision, that was also one of the biggest news for the country, because receiving such international recognition, this is a talent contest. And to Azerbaijan to succeed there, that was very important. And it was very well received all across Azerbaijan. At the same time, as you point out, this event will draw a lot of attention to Azerbaijan, not only to successes of the country, but also to the problems, including to problems related to human rights and political freedoms. So a lot of media attention will be over Azerbaijan. There are a lot of local organizations who are using this event as an opportunity to draw attention to the international community.
Yeah, you anticipated me there. If the opposition and the NGOs were going to use this event to try to bring attention, then you've answered that.
But at the same time, government will use this event as an attempt to draw attention to its successful, what they call policy, economic policy, the beautification of Baku. A lot of construction is happening. So it may go in both ways, but at the same time, Eurovision organizers, they keep repeating that this event is not a political event. This is a music contest, and politics should be aside. But of course...
Of course, politics of course, never is aside in things like this.
Politics always connected, and Azerbaijan is will be under the attention next year.
That was Azerbaijani Service Director Kenan Aliyev speaking with RFERL editor Brian Whitmore. And that's all we have for this week. I'm Bruce Jacobs. Thanks for turning on the blender from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.